This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There here. Yeah. How are you doing? Are you sick? Are you feeling lousy? I got a bunch of good soups to talk about today. The recipes are all up at WCCORadio.com. I've got special guests from here in town, Amol Dixit from Hot Indian. Later on, I got Steve Dolinsky, the Pizza King of Chicago. And I got the exciting update. Guess who won their battle against City Hall to save the parks? That'd be me. I was in a bit of a weird mood last week with my sadness about the danger to the parks. But now I'm better because we went out, my whole neighborhood won our park. We made persuasive arguments at a meeting. The American way, man. Took our kids. Everybody had signs. Whew. And it was a unanimous decision to save the grass and the birds and the little flowers and the soil microbes. So feeling good about that. Okay. So I guess I got that off my chest. I was not ready for this snow. I generally try to live a life where I believe that all weather is good weather. Right? Because we're here. We get to see it. Beautiful. Life is beautiful. But then today I kind of took a side turn. I was like, really? What do you got snow on my geraniums for? Who did this to me? So I don't know. We got to figure this out. I think it wasn't Amol Dixit. He did not come to my backyard and put snow on my geraniums. He is doing his part to make the world warm and nice and lovely. He started Hot Indian Foods a couple years ago. It's kind of the people say the Chipotle of Indian food. He's got the first one was at Midtown Global Market. Now he has one of the Skyway. He's at a couple of the stadiums. All right, but he's here to talk about Diwali, the Festival of Lights. I am all about every Festival of Lights. I'm into Halloween, where you put lights inside a pumpkin. I'm into Hanukkah, where you put lights everywhere. You know, Christmas, you got lights on trees inside, all of it. Give me a Festival of Lights. I'm there for it. Let's talk about Diwali and what's going on in Midtown Global Market. Amol, welcome.
Thank you, Dara. It's always a pleasure to hang out with you.
It is. We see each other a couple times a year. It's like, now we're at the state fair. Now we're inside in the snow. The Minnesota way of life. Okay, so tell everybody, give us a little Diwali 101. What is it?
Sure. Diwali, as you said, is the Festival of Lights. It's the Hindu New Year. So it is really the most celebrated Hindu festival of the year. It's a big deal. And so the actual Diwali isn't for about 2 weeks, but we're going to be celebrating it tonight from 5 to 8 p.m. in the Midtown Global Market.
And this is a public event. There's going to be dancing. I've seen pictures of past ones of cute children.
Yes, it's a free, very family-friendly event. So bring your kids. There's going to be performances, like you said, from a couple different dance groups here in town. One is a youth nonprofit dance group, and then another professional dance group called Ragmala, who does some terrific classical Indian dance. They'll be performing as well as giving a little lesson to any kids who are there who want to learn a little bit about that.
Oh, Ragmala is, we talk about them at the magazine. They are one of the most significant national dance things based in the Twin Cities. Like, they are a huge deal nationally.
They are a huge deal. So we're really excited that we got them to come perform tonight. There's also just a lot of other things for kids to do. There's arts and crafts. My wife is going to be reading the story of Diwali from a kid's storybook. And she's also going to...
I kind of need that. I could use that myself.
It's fun. And my wife is also going to be leading some rounds of Diwali bingo. So... yeah, lots of things. And one of the centerpieces of the event is Diwali, one of the big traditions with Diwali is fireworks. Obviously, that wouldn't necessarily be the best thing for us to do inside the Midtown Global Market. So
fireworks are always tough indoors.
Always. And so instead, we're going to do our best to replicate the experience. And there's going to be a moment where we make the place as dark as possible, hand out some glow sticks to kids, and have a little glow stick moment to, you know, replicate that firework experience, let the kids jump around, dance around for a little bit.
That sounds like a very good way to spend a oddly snowy yes. early October day. Go inside, see some stuff. All right. And this sounds delightful and fun. I want to kind of talk to you about the state of Indian food in the Twin Cities. We were talking in the green room, and you were saying like there still seems to be maybe a lot of people don't have a basic literacy with Indian food. So India, obviously, it's got its own subcontinent, and there's a rich culture of many foods that are very popular in the mainstream. You couldn't get more cashews and turmeric in a juice bar these days. But still, there's a certain amount of disconnect. People didn't grow up eating it. And so let's talk about Indian food. What's the state of it here in the Twin Cities? What I see is, a lot of these kind of tried and true places that people love, you know, the names like Taste of India that have been here for a few generations. But then it's hard to get a sense of what's going on besides that.
Yeah, no, I think that's accurate. The, in general, Indian food isn't quite as mainstream as other ethnic foods such as, well, obviously Chinese and Mexican, but even some of the other East Asian cuisines like Thai and Korean, I would even argue. And I think it's just a matter of time. I think of it as Indian cuisine is where Chinese cuisine was probably 20 years ago.
Interesting.
And so it's a matter of more and more people introducing Indian food in different ways to make it more approachable and accessible, which is the reason I started Hot Indian 6 years ago, understanding that Indian food can be overwhelming and a little intimidating, and it doesn't seem approachable if you've never had it before.
Because it's got different components, an ideal Indian meal, you should put some bread with the entree and put, different things on the table. So you're not just ordering one thing. You got to order the thing separately, except some places will do that for you, but you don't know about that. It's complicated.
Sure. Well, I think there's also a perception that it's all super spicy and it's not for you per se. And so I think what you see a lot of with some of the newer, more contemporary concepts is folks making it more approachable, both in terms of the form that it's served in. So like, for instance, Hot Indian, you mentioned it being similar to an Indian Chipotle. We have Indian burritos, which we call Indoritos. And so the idea there is, even if you don't understand what is chicken tikka masala, that's the stuff inside a burrito, it's a burrito. So you might try it. And also educating people that, no, it's not all super spicy, making it approachable, giving folks a way to customize it to their spice level, to their spice threshold. And I would say once people try it, they realize it's delicious. It's not just heat and spice for the sake of it. It's very flavorful, and people find the level they're comfortable with. I've been really pleased to see how open to the cuisine folks have been here, and it's open to different spice levels. That was a big unknown when we were opening this thing, is would everyone want everything mild? And, you realize this is a great food city and people have really sophisticated palates. And so we get asked a lot for spice it up, give us your heat. And so we can accommodate that. But we can also accommodate folks who don't want it so hot and want something that's just kind of middle of the road spice level.
Well, and then it's so complicated because I was in a kind of food critic place the other day. I had some basmati rice at this fancy restaurant, and I was just thinking about how much thought, effort, heart goes into the special creation of basmati rice. And, I'd say there's a lot of food snobs go around with their particular, this is not how it should be. It should be a lot fluffier than this, or, it should be a lot more flavorful than this. And it's, I've been eaten in restaurants for a long time. I don't think that I will ever have an appropriately sophisticated, developed, experienced palate to really understand the best biryani.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair, and it's probably shared by many people. And so especially being in the fast casual space where we're not going to be charging $20, $25 a plate, we are constantly talking about that balance of which items And what parts of the items should we be putting that much cost into, or versus, you know, there's certain elements that are just basic commodities that people aren't going to appreciate and pay for. And so I think especially in the fast casual space, it's finding that sweet spot of what is it, where is it that people are finding the value, and putting the love and care into those parts of the food.
Yeah, it's complicated. We were talking in the green room. You're rolling out these big state fair hit fried chicken, your fried chicken sandwich, to the Midtown Global Market location. And I think that'll be really popular. You must have had some kind of devil on your shoulder wondering, what, you know, is this still Indian food?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. When we did it for the state fair, you know, it was really just about what is going to work at the state fair and yet still make sense coming from our brand, Hot Indian. And this idea of a fried chicken tikka sandwich came from our chef Janine Holig, who's amazing. And my wife came up with the name for it, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And it was a hit. And what we realized was this idea of Indianizing familiar food is totally on brand for us. And it doesn't have to be traditional Indian food tweaked a little bit. It can be more traditional American food Indianized. So it's coming at it both ways. And we even say, whereas we used to say Hot Indian is simplifying Indian food, now we just say it's sexy food for sexy people. And so you can come at it a few different ways and still get to just a delicious dish.
All right. Well, and then today it's sexy food for sexy people that have children and want to be indoors and celebrate Diwali and learn about it. Okay. Which seems like a very Minneapolis on brand moment. All right, Amal, I don't have a ton of time. Is there anything else you wanted to let us know about the state of Hot Indian? I'm not going to pester you about the new, you know, any new locations, but you're in the soccer stadium. You're at Alliance.
Yeah, we've been there all year. It's been awesome. And so there's two more events there, at least two more. There's a Tommy Johnny football game next Saturday, and then the Loons home playoff match next Sunday. So coming to a close there. Unfortunately, our run at Target Field came to an untimely demise this past week. But the stadiums have been great for us. They're a lot of fun, and we just serve up a couple rice bowls there. So if you're at either of those events next weekend, come say hi to us.
All right, perfect. Amol Dixit from Hot Indian, one of my favorite places in town. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, Sarah.
I'm going to try to make it down to the Diwali celebration tonight. Of course, Midtown Global Market is where that will be happening. That's right on basically Chicago and Lake Street in the heart of old Minneapolis. It's really a fun way to spend the night. You go park, you'll be indoors, let the kids run around, maybe pick up a new-to-you Latin chocolate or something. Fun times to be had at the Midtown Global Market. All right, we come back. We're going to talk soup. Are you ready to make yourself some healing soups? You ready to feel better with soup? Oh, I got a plan for you. Dara here. All right. DBT has some sadness. He had to take his boat out of the river. He's not ready. I don't know. A lot of us are just kind of not there yet. I did the last lawn mowing last weekend getting ready, but oof, I need another 3 weeks of nice weather. I don't know what's going to happen. Everybody's getting sniffles. Everyone's getting sick. All right, so here's what we did, we being me. I put a bunch of recipes for your feel-better soups. You got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of your loved ones. And so I've got five great recipes up at WCCORadio.com. You can do a little shortcut, WCCORadio.com/Dara. That's me. I got the recipes. Or you can do WCCORadio.com/menu. All right, so the first one is just so spicy. Are you one of those people that believes that you can just blast a cold out of your head with enough spice? Then this is the soup for you. So it's a kimchi miso ramen. So that's a lot of things out of jars, really. People get a little intimidated, but you're just taking different things and combining them. That's good. My grandma Kay was a big believer in healing yourself with garlic and ginger, and she had a kind of Ukrainian brew that she'd whip up. And that is not so different than the traditional Portuguese bread and garlic soup. So garlic, it is one of the world's greatest natural antibacterials. It's so good for you. You can make the soup vegetarian with a little, you know, you're just basically using something green and then garlic. This recipe is cilantro, but you could substitute. If you're trying to use all the basil in the garden, you could use that. All right, I've got a recipe. This is the one I am personally making today. That would be the ham hock and split pea soup. I am one of the few people, apparently, who loves the smell of split peas. It's so homey. It's so earthy. Just throw that all in a slow cooker. Takes very little work. Very, very good for you. Fiber, vitamin A. There's a reason people have been eating split peas for generations. Should we just call everything sexy food for sexy people? And then the kicker is that it's split pea soup? I don't know. Maybe. All right, I got the full-on beef broth recipe for you people that are sick, and then you have someone who loves you who's going to cook for you. Bone broth. We used to just call this broth, but if you cook bones with a little vinegar, liberates the gelatin, and athletes have this all the time. People that are trying to heal their leaky guts, they have this all the time. It's a really good kind of just generally healing thing, beef broth. I got a basic recipe for that. A lot of athlete stars have beef broth all the time. So now you have the secrets. You can have it yourself. And, of course, chicken soup. I have Barefoot Contessa's recipe for chicken soup. I mean, there's just so many. There's so many. There's millions. American civilization is founded on chicken soup. She uses parsnips, which I like very much. I like a good parsnip. If you're not a parsnip person, you can leave them out. And you can just kind of everything in the chicken sink, just start throwing stuff in there if you want. I believe in free-forming your soups. All right, so these are your healing soups so you can take care of yourself and you can feel better on this kind of lousy day, which we're not ready for. We wanted a sunny day to go look at leaves. We didn't get it. Who do we yell at? I don't know. Hopefully not me. All right, so as ever, you can text 651-989-9226. I'll come back in a bit. We're going to talk to Steve Dolinsky, the Pizza King of Chicago. But you can text me or call in 651-989-9226. Sarah here. All right, we're going to get through this odd snow in early October together. We're going to do it by talking to Steve Dolinsky of Chicago. I've been wanting to have him on the show forever, but he's always very busy giving people tours of the best pizza in Chicago. He has a book, Pizza City. He's a whirlwind of energy and insight and information. Steve Dolinsky, I'm so happy to have you.
It is so great to be here. I love the play-in music. That is very apropos. It is Sweet Home Chicago.
That's very Jonathan. He's on my board producer. He's now laughing right now. Okay, so I'm so happy to talk to you. Tell us, I don't even know where to start. You tell us about these food tours. I think that's what people are just going to think like, oh, I got to get in my car and get out of here. I'm driving to Chicago to eat pizza. You do this tour thing.
I do tours, yes. And I should back it up and just say I'm originally from Minnesota. I interned for Mark Rosen 30 years ago this year at CCO.
Oh, he is a hero.
Experience of the Twin Cities. But I moved to Chicago.
Wait, you're a former WCCO intern?
I was Mark Rosen's intern in 1989.
Holy moly. Someone go tell Mark. All right. So I didn't know that.
So I moved to Chicago 28 years ago, and I'm a food reporter at ABC7 here. And a couple of years ago, and I covered the sort of the whole food scene, but a couple of years ago, I really got into pizza, and I kind of went down this rabbit hole of trying to figure out really who made the best pizza, where was the best pizza, and nobody got a free pass. You know, there were a lot of sort of sacred cows in Chicago, and I really took a reporter's approach to this subject. And I ended up going to 185 places in the region to narrow it down to 101 that I really recommend highly. That's what the book Pizza City USA comes from. And then about a little over a year ago, my wife and I started this pizza tour business, Pizza City USA Tours. And by the way, all this info is at pizzacityusa.com. And so we give tours every weekend in Chicago. We do three tours a weekend. We do a bus tour that runs year round. So even in the depths of the polar vortex, every Saturday we do the tour from 11 a.m. to 2:30. And then we do two walking tours in season. Now, our season's going to end, as you know, at the end of October, because in November, even in Chicago, yeah, it's pretty chilly out. So, but we do two neighborhood walks, West Loop and then Bucktown Wicker Park. And again, every tour is the same, four styles of pizza in 3 hours. And that was really important to me because I didn't want to just have people come to Chicago and say, I want deep dish.
Yes, that was the question I was going to ask you, the casserole that you people make.
Okay, well, let me just back up there, too, for a second. It's not a casserole. You're thinking of a style called stuffed. And a lot of people, even in Chicago, we have locals on our tours, and they confuse these two. They're two different styles. So Deep started in 1943 at a place called Uno's. 30 years later, Giordano's on the south side started doing stuffed pizza. And the difference there is in the architecture. Deep dish has that bottom layer of dough topped by slices of mozzarella to protect that dough from the sauce, and then your toppings and your sauce at the end. Now, a stuffed pie has that bottom layer of dough, slices of mozz, topping, and then another layer of dough on top of that covered by a lake of sauce. The problem with that construction is, yes, it is an above-ground outdoor pool. It's a boat anchor. It's whatever you want to call it. And it's a casserole, but you have that gummy top layer of dough, which I dislike vehemently, and I'm actually not a fan of that style of pizza. I do mention it in my book. There are a couple of places that I think are okay, but stuffed should not be confused with deep.
All right.
That said, deep dish, in a way, is kind of our Times Square, if you will, if you come to Chicago. Like, it's that box you check, and you got to do it. It's mostly for visitors or out-of-towners. I contend in the book that tavern-style, square-cut, thin and crispy pizza is Chicago's style of pizza because that's what we've been eating since the 1920s, as people throughout the Midwest have, Milwaukee, Minnesota, Michigan, you name it. They have that bar pie, tavern pie. That is really the Chicago style of pizza. However, because of the uniqueness of deep dish, that's what we've become known for.
I have so many arguments inside of me just bubbling to get out. Okay, first of all, seriously, is there a difference between the I've even lost a deep dish and stuffed crust? Because they both from the, if you were like a bird spotter sitting out there with your binoculars, they look the same. They're 2 inches thick.
No, they don't. And again, I only say this because I've been boots on the ground to all these places are. So here's a good example. And there's a Minneapolis connection. My Pie. So I grew up in the 70s going to that My Pie. I think it was in Golden Valley. And they're still in business. There's one left. They started in Chicago. There's one left in Chicago. It's on our Bucktown tour. That pizza is very crisp on the bottom. It's only about an inch and a half high, probably as high as a Sicilian. But it is not that above ground outdoor pool nonsense. It is very thin in the middle. Now, Lou Malnati's is the sort of the OG that they've been around since 71. There are 50 plus locations in Chicagoland. They're a little bit higher, but it doesn't have that second layer of dough and that 2 inch plus height that you're going to see on a stuffed pie. Totally different style of pizza. But whenever people talk about Chicago pizza, they go to Giordano's, and it says right outside on the front on the facade, Chicago's famous stuffed pizza. It doesn't say deep dish, it says stuffed. And that is the pizza people walk around on Michigan Avenue with boxes of seven slices in it because they can only have one slice typically before they feel like they need a nap. That is a different style than deep dish. So, again, Bartoli's is deep. My Pie is deep. Lou Malnati's, all good deep. La Briola, all good deep dishes, not in that stuffed camp.
Okay, so is your contention that people are roaming around the United States and all of us are completely baffled and confused and we don't know the difference between our stuffed and our deep dish Chicago pizzas?
Yes. Yes, and not only outside of Chicago, but in Chicago, there is confusion. And I blame the New York-based media because whenever John Stewart was famous for doing this rant, right, they would come to Chicago for a weekend, and they only go to the places that are within six blocks of their hotels on Michigan Avenue, and lo and behold, most of those places do stuffed pizza or deep dish. But they're promoting the wrong kind of pizza. And so, props to both. They both created in Chicago, hallelujah. But deep dish and stuffed should not be confused. And so, again, Lou Malnati's is the most successful in Chicago. Like I said, 50-plus locations. They don't do stuffed pie. They do deep dish. And it is a very – and I'm guessing you've had Lou Malnati's.
I have.
Okay. It's not that 3-inch high monstrosity.
No, it is not. But we do have, here in Minneapolis, we have a Giordano's. And so
yeah,
I happen to
yeah. That is stuffed pie, exactly. That is from 1974, not deep dish.
All right, so
it's
now
done in a deep it's done in a deep pan. They're both done in the same deep, high-sided pan. So you could call them, you know, one of the things we talk about on the tour, we have lots of little terminology. But, you know, one of the things I say is all deeps are pans, not all pans are deep. All deeps are pans, not all pans are deep. Because you've got Sicilian, which is a pan pizza, but it's a shallower pan, right?
Yeah.
You've got Roman al Taglio, which is a pan pizza, but it's a shallow pan. Now you've got deep dishes. Those are in a deeper pan. They're round, and they're deep pans. But it doesn't mean you've got to fill it all the way to the top. It just means it's done in a little bit of a high-sided pan. So I know it's like splitting hairs, but really, deep is separate from stuffed, and I don't want you to confuse the two. If you're in Minneapolis and you only go to Giordano's, you're not getting the best of what we can offer.
All right. Well, I am very happy to have had this discussion because I think I, you know, I'll say it out loud. I have been confusing my stuffed and my deep dish all these years. I think that these stuffed pizzas, they remind me of a Greek, like a traditional Greek, you know, like a pizza or something. It's a thing that is stuffed inside layers of phyllo dough, except it's not. Anyway,
no.
That's a whole other story. Because they are like, you know, kind of wrapped casseroles. But let's talk about this tavern square cut pizza. You feel like this is a Chicago thing? Because I think a lot of people in St. Paul are going to rise up and disagree with you.
Well, okay, all I can speak for is Chicago's history. I don't know about St. Paul's history. I know there were the railroad barons there in the 1800s. But in Chicago, in the 1920s, as we had all these Italian immigrants, and we had lots of bars in our neighborhoods. Remember, Chicago is a city of 77 neighborhoods. And so you would typically stop at the neighborhood tavern on your way home for dinner, and you'd have a beer. And the bartenders realized, and this is, by the way, all from the Chicago History Museum and historians I've talked to for the book, they realized they get you to buy more beer if they give you something salty to eat. Maybe it's sort of like the toasted rab they have in St. Louis on the hill. But you'd get this, so they bake these little thin pizzas in these makeshift ovens they had in the bar. They cut it into squares. They pass it around the bar for free and could easily hold a square in one hand and a beer in the other. And you'd have a couple of squares, maybe get a couple of beers, and then go home for dinner. So tavern was intended to be a snack, not a meal. And you ask anybody on the South Side, the old school joints, Palermo's 95th, Baracco's, Triano's, they'll tell you the same thing. So this has been around in Chicago since the 20s. In fact, Home Run Inn, a famous South Side place, was a tavern in the 20s and then didn't become a quote-unquote pizzeria until 47. But they were all doing these square-cut tavern style, we call them tavern style, Chicago thin pies. Now, maybe in St. Paul they were doing it before then, and maybe someone, you know, went to Chicago and copied it, but, you know, they're both major metropolises. They both have lots of people. They both have bars and taverns. And so it certainly could have popped up there at the same time. I know people in Milwaukee, people in Michigan, they say the same thing. They claim ownership to the bar pie. I think it's a Midwestern thing. But I think if you're looking at what is Chicago-style pizza, okay, mm-hmm. The deep dish didn't come around until 43. And this the other thing we just talked about at length, 74, the stuffed. But the tavern style has been around forever, and people in Chicago live and breathe in the neighborhoods. Day in, day out, they're getting tavern-style thin pizzas. They're not ordering deep dishes.
See, this is why I wanted to have Steve Dolinsky on the radio, because he knows all the things about Chicago pizza. It's in the Pizza City book, and you can get it personal style if you go down there and take one of these tours. I think this has just been fascinating. So let's go through. So you go on these tours. There are four. You said people are going to try the four styles of Chicago pizza on these tours. What's the four?
Okay, yeah, so we have, well, in the book, I say there are 10 styles of pizza in Chicago. Yes, I said there are 10 styles of pizza in Chicago. There's thin, there's tavern style thin, there's Neapolitan, artisan, New York slices. Yes, we have slices. We've got deep, we've got stuffed, we've got Roman, Sicilian, and Detroit. So 10 styles exist in Chicago, but the goal of the tours was four styles in about 3 hours. And so, you know, the bus tour that's going on right now, for example, they started with deep dish at La Briola. They're going to go have Pauly G's Detroit style. Then they're going to have some tavern style from Pat's, which has been around since 1950. And they're going to end with a beautiful artisan pie with a 3-day fermentation and 70% hydration in the dough with some, you know, beautiful fennel and sopressata across the top. That's where they're going to end it. So we do all different styles. One, you know, the Bucktown tour is going to be different. And the West Loop tour is going to have Roman al Taglio and a spicy Sicilian slice. So again, opening people's eyes up to the fact that we have more than that one Giordano's on Michigan Avenue.
And so you've been doing this for a while. Are people into it?
Yeah, we started about 16 months ago with the tours. They actually started before the book came out. The book's about a year out. And we are getting a ton of locals and visitors, which is kind of cool. Like people from the suburbs come in, and then we get people from TripAdvisor that saw us, and they're from, you know, Europe. And their mind is blown because, again, they are just going based on whatever they saw in media about Chicago. And it's sort of like, you know, okay, Al Capone, Michael Jordan, yeah, we get it. You know, stuffed pizza, yeah, we get it. There's other stuff, you know, there's variety in Chicago beyond that. And we're getting a ton of private tours now, which is a lot of fun, too. So I'll take a group of like 50 people out and do three or four places for lunch, which is kind of fun. So we work with a bus company in Chicago. We've got really cool limo buses, and we show them around the city. And then, of course, we talk about Chicago history, not just pizza history. We really talk about the city and some of the landmarks. And it's not an architectural tour per se, but we definitely hit some of the highlights of the neighborhoods if we're going on the bus.
Do you feel like being from Minnesota has given you an advantage to do the research and learn things about Chicago that people from Chicago sort of take for granted or don't see?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've lived in the city now for about 28 years, but like, as I said, I grew up in St. Cloud and I went to high school at Hopkins and worked for CCO for that one summer 30 years ago. But my background is in journalism, and I went to I'm actually calling you right now from Madison, Wisconsin, where I went to college for homecoming. And I take that sort of that Midwestern approach, you know, the sort of boots on the ground, going to do the hard work and do, you know, put the legwork into this and not take for granted places that have been around for 30 or 40 years. Because that's typically what happens in Chicago. Like my wife is from the suburbs and she grew up with Barnaby's and Lou Malnati's, and that's kind of the end of the story. And a lot of people in Chicago claim to be pizza experts because they grew up there, and yet they've only been to three or four pizza places. And so here's the Minnesotan coming in with sort of wide eyes and a fresh take and saying, you know what, I know this place has been around for 40 years. I don't care. I'm going to go in there, you know, next to a place that's brand new. I'm going to go in the same period of time. So I did the first wave in about 3.5 months, and I did the second wave in about 3.5 months. So everything was in a condensed period of time, and I had very specific rules for, in, you know, going to these places. I'd call up anonymously. I'd order every pizza is the same order, half sausage, half pepperoni. Unless it was a Neapolitan joint, I'd get a margherita pizza. I'd always take at least two bites, you know, interior and then one on the heel. So I had very sort of methodical approach to this. And again, nobody got a free pass. So there is a little bit of controversy in the book in terms of like the last chapter. It's kind of the overrated chapter. Places I felt just were not memorable to me. And some of them were the old line big dogs in Chicago.
Oof, that's what we like. We like a brave Minnesotan to get out there with their work ethic and make it all happen. All right. Steve Dolinsky, Pizza City USA is the book, pizzacityusa.com. Take a pizza tour. And I am so happy that you came on the show today. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was so, so great to talk to my folks in Minnesota.
I bet a bunch of people are calling. You remember him? He used to. So that's good times. Thank you so much, sir. Steve Dolinsky, I sure appreciate your time.
Thanks so much. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, everybody. We're going to come back. We're going to do a couple of Ask Me Anything. And that makes me want to go to Chicago and have pizza. Maybe we should just get a tour bus and I'll go down. All right. More when we come back. Dara here on our unexpected snowy bitty funny day, 35 degrees right now. All right, so we've got a couple minutes for an Ask Me Anything. Text line, a couple people want to go on a pizza tour. All right, I'm going to shoot some people some emails around here. Maybe we'll make this happen. Just get a big bus with a pizza flag on top. Wouldn't we be great? We'd be cute, the pizza flag. All right, so I got a question about, so for the wonderful soups that are up, the healing soups, people do want to cook soup, I understand. What mushrooms to use if you're going to make the kimchi ramen soup? Here's what I think about mushrooms. You use the mushroom where you are. There is nothing wrong with a button mushroom. Button mushrooms are beautiful. They're delicious. You let them keep growing, and then they become portobellos. So I don't know why people are casting aspersions on the nobility of button mushrooms. There's nothing wrong with them. I like them. And they're fresher because more people use them for their beef bourguignons and so on. So, but if you're more, you know, you just want to get a couple of the expensive mushrooms at the co-ops, couple of shiitakes, you do that. You do the thing that works for you now. If you spend 2 years making button mushroom soup and then you're like, oh, I'm going to spend money on an oyster mushroom, you do that. You don't let food snobs box you in. You live a free life. I got a soup add-in. Texter said, add dumplings to your soup. That is a great point. You add some dumplings, then you've made it a meal. All the dumplings. You learn how to make the kind of biscuit drop-in dumplings. You will eat well for the rest of your life. All right, I got a text. Sister and I have a plan. We're going to be, we want to be better bakers. We're going to use this winter and become better bakers. Do I have any tips? Well, I mean, there's just so many great books out there, but I would say the number one thing that will up your baking right away is to just use better ingredients. And so my Minnesota butter, Hope butter, I think is a, if you've never tried Hope butter in your pie crusts or in your cookies, it changes so much. It is delicious. And I use salted butter because I feel like it stays fresh longer. I know a lot of bakers swear by unsalted butter. But anyway, so a better butter and then a better flour. There's a couple of mills around here now. You can get fresh, local flour. If you've never had a fresh flour and this sounds like crazy talk to you, it really does make a big difference. Flour gets kind of stale over time. It isn't just a neutral flavor. So you can go to Bakersfield, Kieran's Kitchen in Northeast. You can go to the Mill City Farmers Markets. I think it's called Mill Valley Mills Flour for those things. And so just ingredients, that's my main thing. All right, so what's happening? If you want to up your baking, get some better ingredients. Oh, so next week, we're taking a tour around the United States and talking with some key foreign-born chefs, the contributions they've made to our food scene. Where would we be without Jacques Pepin? We'll find out. So till then, you bring the soup, and I will bring the bread, and we will get through this snow day together. And then we'll meet here next week on Off the Menu.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.